If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, Seth talks to CNN's Jake Tapper about the North Korean summit and more. Plus, Tapper continues the conversation backstage at Studio 8G just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump and Kim Jong-un met in Singapore Tuesday for the first ever summit between an American president and a North Korean leader. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. No matter your feelings on Donald Trump, he is currently attempting diplomacy over war, which is undeniably the better option. That said, I do have some concerns based on some things Donald Trump didn't say yesterday and also based on the fact that he is Donald Trump. For example, Trump has managed this summit very much like a made-for-TV spectacle, fueling speculation about whether it would even happen or not, minting commemorative coins, writing dramatic letters, and staging photo ops with game show-sized envelopes. Look at that. It looks like Trump is auditioning to be the next mascot for Gmail. And the media has responded in kind. Yesterday, for example, they spent the day obsessively tracking Kim Jong-un's whereabouts in Singapore as he made his way about the town.
Kim Jong-un, someone who rarely leaves his own country, this is the furthest he's ever traveled, is out and about on the town in Singapore.
Kim Jong-un to be out strolling the streets of Singapore.
Yeah. Now you see him walking around the streets of Singapore. He has crowds of people. I could see across the road lots of people taking photos of him, waving at him.
We don't know whether he's going back to the St. Regis Hotel or for another stop, but clearly, you know, the night is young for Kim Jong-un.
As you saw there, he was walking into the Marina Bay Sands, a very popular hotel and that has a casino inside of it.
Kim Jong-un hanging out at a nightclub in Singapore.
Good Lord. Why not just make an old-timey newsreel? Ah, Singapore, the jewel of the Orient. Folks here are all aflutter about the upcoming summit. Why, who's this? It's none other than North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. Taking a break from torturing his own people to pose for a few snaps with American businessman Don Trump. Shake it away, boys. Imagine being in that nightclub. Kim Jong-un? Now, in the run-up to this meeting, Trump admitted that he wasn't doing much to prepare. Later, he tried to back away from that comment and, as usual, rambled his way into talking about the 2016 election and Hillary Clinton.
I didn't say that. I said I've been preparing all my life. I always believe in preparation, but I've been preparing all my life. You know, these one-week preparations, they don't work. Just ask Hillary what happened to her in the debates.
Oh. So Trump prepared for this summit the same way he prepared for the debates. What was that meeting like? Just 3 hours of Trump stalking Kim Jong-un around a room? What happens when the world's slowest pursuer chases the world's slowest prey? Tonight on Planet Earth, Sloth versus Slug. So if Trump admitted he didn't prepare for the summit, the key question going into the meeting was this: how would he know if it was a success? What does success even entail? And was asked that question over the weekend at the G7 in Canada, and his answer did not inspire confidence.
How long do you think it would take you to figure out whether he's serious about giving
up? Good question. How long would it take? I think within the first minute. I'll know.
How?
Just my touch, my feel. That's what I do.
Touch and feel is not how you determine the success of a summit. Touch and feel is how you determine whether a blouse is made of cotton.
Touch the feel of cotton, the fabric of my life.
So Trump said he'd know if Kim was serious from his touch and feel, and yesterday we got to see that touch and feel with their first handshake. The first handshake and photo op in history with a North Korean leader and an American president. And I'm sorry, but why can't these guys find a suit that fits them? Look at that. I mean, they look like they shop at a store called Business Pajamas. Looks like a promo picture for a movie called Honey, I Shrunk the Dictators. Trump and Kim then sat down for a one-on-one meeting, and look at Kim's face. Is it just me, or is even he confused at how he got here? They looked like they set up on a blind date by their weirdest friend. Oh, what? They were? In fact, just when you thought it couldn't get any crazier, Dennis Rodman was there in Singapore for the summit, and he was interviewed on CNN wearing a MAGA hat and a shirt for something called Potcoin. I'm pretty sure potcoins are what you have to eat to hallucinate that interview. Especially when, for some reason, Rodman thanked his agent, former Bulls coach Phil Jackson, and Pearl Jam frontman Eddie Vedder.
Can I thank some people, though, while I'm here? Can I thank some people? All the good people that's really stood by me, Darren Prince, you know, Vo, all the guys that went with me in North Korea. You know, I'm thinking Chuck Daly, I'm thinking Phil Jackson, I'm thinking Jeannie Buss, I'm thinking, you know, Pete Giannopoulos, I'm thinking Eddie Vedder, the Pearl Jam, everybody that's supporting me with all through all these things.
Chris Cuomo does pretty good there until his eyebrows shoot up to his hairline. Man, the news these days really feels like a Mad Lib from 1999. Dennis Rodman was in Singapore promoting Potcoin, where he thanked Eddie Vedder at a summit with North Korea and President Donald Trump. In fact, after watching the summit, you might actually think you OD'd on Potcoins from how often Trump, a man who has fought with everyone from allies to war heroes, complimented brutal dictator Kim Jong-un.
It's my honor, and we will have a terrific relationship, I have no doubt. Very good. Very, very good. Excellent relationship. Thank you.
He's got a great personality. He's a, you know, funny guy. He's a very smart guy. He's a great negotiator.
Great personality and very smart. A very worthy, very smart negotiator. Absolutely. And we had a terrific day.
What did you learn about him, sir?
I learned he's a very talented man.
Well, he is very talented. Anybody that takes over a situation like he did at 26 years of age and is able to run it and run it tough.
What are you talking about? This is a guy who starves his own citizens and assassinates people with anti-aircraft guns. You're talking about him like he started Apple in his garage. But I guess it shouldn't surprise me that Trump's idea of talent is getting rich by taking over your dad's business. Trump was born on third base, whereas Kim was born on third base and then shot the third baseman. In fact, Trump seemed as interested in looking forward at potential business opportunities in North Korea as he was in getting Kim to give up his nuclear weapons.
As an example, they have great beaches. You see that whenever they're exploding their cannons into the ocean. Huh? I said, boy, look at that pool. Wouldn't that make a great condo behind? And I explained, I said, you know, instead of doing that, you could have the best hotels in the world right there. Think of it from a real estate perspective.
He accidentally told a great joke. I mean,
you
They have great beaches. You can see it when they're exploding their cannons into the oceans. Is a great joke. That would be like me coming to work today and saying, I accidentally signed a treaty. Even when he's in the middle of a summit over nuclear weapons, he's still trying to sell a hotel timeshare. If you give up your nuclear weapons now, you can stay one night free at my new Trump Hotel Pyongyang. But again, diplomacy with North Korea is undeniably, it's a good thing. It is a very good thing. It's vastly preferable to fiery rhetoric and threats of nuclear war. The problem isn't that Trump is engaging in diplomacy. The problem is that he doesn't know what he's doing and only cares about optics. For example, at their working lunch yesterday, Trump asked photographers to make sure he and Kim looked good. But watch Kim's face after Trump's comment.
Very nice. Getting a good picture of everybody, so we look nice and handsome and thin.
Beautiful.
Perfect.
Okay, so now here, I can, if you're wondering, I can, there's an explanation here. You see, he's a ruthless dictator. That was the first time he's ever heard that he's not thin. You're looking at a 10-time People's Republic sexiest man in the world. In fact, Trump is apparently so obsessed with the optics of this summit that his White House made an action movie trailer for the meeting and played it for reporters before his press conference. Trump even said he showed the trailer to Kim Jong-un on an iPad. Again, this is a real video made by our White House.
7 billion people inhabit planet Earth. Of those alive today, only a small number will leave a lasting impact. Destiny Pictures presents A Story of Opportunity. A new story, a new beginning. One of peace, two men, two leaders, one destiny. Featuring President Donald Trump and Chairman Kim Jong-un in a meeting to remake history.
Is that an official White House video or a direct-to-DVD movie starring Steven Seagal? The White House is under siege, and only one president-turned-karate master can stop them. Steven Seagal stars as President Trump in Taekwondo Donald. Of course, when President Obama said he would meet with North Korea without preconditions, Republicans mocked him as naive and incompetent. But today, Trump's supporters are showering him with praise. In fact, Trump even seemed to make a major concession to North Korea, apparently without running it by military officials or South Korea first. He promised to stop joint military exercises in the region. Trump explains his decision this way.
We call them war games, and I call them war games, and they're tremendously expensive. The amount of money that we spend on that is incredible. We fly in bombers from Guam. I said it when I first started. I said, where did the bombers come from? Guam. Nearby. I said, oh, great. Nearby. Where's nearby? 6.5 hours. 6.5 hours, that's a long time for these big, massive planes to be flying to South Korea to practice and then drop bombs all over the place and then go back to Guam. I know a lot about airplanes.
You know a lot about airplanes. Because people who know a lot about airplanes don't have to say, I know a lot about airplanes. If you got on a flight, you would be worried if you heard your pilot say, we're expecting some light turbulence on our way to sunny Florida. Should take about 3.5 hours. Thanks for flying Delta. I know a lot about airplanes. Again, diplomacy, so much better than threats of war. And if this summit ratchets down the tension, then that's a good thing. We just have to hope Trump doesn't mess it up, because when it comes to messing things up...
That's what I do.
This has been a closer look.
Hey, everyone, this is Henry from Late Night, and you are about to hear Seth's interview with Jake Tapper. But before that, we wanted to quickly give you a heads up about something. Seth talked to Jake on Monday, which was before the North Korean summit. Just a quick point of clarification so you are not confused. And after that interview, stick around to hear my exclusive backstage interview with Jake just for this podcast. Thanks so much.
Very excited about this. You guys, our guest tonight is CNN's chief Washington correspondent. His debut novel, The Hellfire Club, is available now. Please welcome back to the show our friend Jake Tapper, everybody.
I'm good. I just left a city full of people dressed like that.
Yeah, everybody in Washington's very happy. It's been, what was the last time a Washington sports team won a title? Was it like early 90s or something?
Maybe? I can't even remember.
It's been a long time. So that's, I'm glad people.
I don't root for any of them. So I don't.
You don't want, you know. You're
I'm a Philadelphia fan.
You're, so you probably, yeah. More often than not, actively work against them, right?
I do everything I can to sabotage them. So
I want to talk about the book, but first, obviously, you managed to do this while you still have your day job.
Yes.
And yesterday, often on Sunday, you are the first to catch what would be called, I guess politely be called spin.
Spin.
Larry Kudlow, the chief economic advisor, he came on your show, and he basically said Justin Trudeau stabbed Donald Trump in the back. And the worst part about it was he weakened Donald Trump before his summit with Kim Jong-un. What is it like to watch that take form in real time on your show?
Well, it's just fascinating because obviously we all saw the G7 blow up the way it did, and President Trump on Air Force One firing off his tweets, removing the United States from a communique, as one does.
Yeah.
And there really hadn't been any explanation about why it was. And so Larry Kudlow came on the show, and I didn't know what they were going to say. Usually you have an idea of what they're going to say, but this was the birth of the spin. And obviously it was coordinated because they were saying it at the same time on other channels with different guests. But the birth of the spin that this was Justin Trudeau's fault.
Yeah.
And it's so offended Donald Trump.
And then do you in those times, because you're processing in real time, do you find, like, it's your job to give them room to lay this out for everyone to see?
Well, that's, I mean, part of the job is, these are your leaders.
Sure.
What are they saying? And then my job is to push back and challenge it. For instance, I don't know if you guys knew, but on occasion, President Trump has been known.
Yeah.
On occasion. To insult people, too.
Oh, my God. Breaking news.
It has you really have to follow the news closely.
Because he does it between the lines.
Yeah,
it's
so
very
it's
subtle.
Subtle. It's subtle. The occasional bon mot.
Yeah, exactly. obviously, there's been a lot talking. We just showed a clip. He doesn't feel like preparation is that important for this meeting. Do you feel like his national security advisors are panicked by this, or do you think at this point they would be shocked if he said, let's bone up on North Korea?
I think that they would be shocked. I mean, he's never been a detail guy.
Yeah.
I think that the national security team there is smart and prepared. I do wonder about this initial meeting that they're going to have, where it's just Kim Jong-un and President Trump and two translators, and that's it.
Yeah.
Because usually it's not done that way, and no one really knows what's going to happen, and afterwards, no one will really know what happened.
Right. Because no one from that room can be, like, trusted, right? I mean,
in the terms of a novel, where we have four unreliable narrators.
We do have four Now, Donald Trump doesn't, you know, it seems like in times that he's talked about our nuclear arsenal and our plan, he doesn't seem to understand the finer details of it.
No, that's right. There was that debate in 2015 when Hugh Hewitt, the conservative talk radio host, asked him about the nuclear triad. And the nuclear triad is, you know, it's having nukes from land, from sea, and from air. And it was pretty clear he had no idea what the nuclear triad is. What's amazing about this stuff that is now obviously he's in charge of it.
Right.
Is the idea that there is no, I didn't know that, I need to bone up on it.
Yeah.
For instance,
there's no shame in not knowing things and boning up on
it. A million things, and it always happens during any presidential race, all candidates get caught not knowing things.
Right.
But for instance, he has this thing, he just did it the other day. You know, NATO, this alliance we're in, the deal was, the commitment was, every country in NATO has agreed to spend 2% of their GDP on defense spending. Kind of a wonky thing, but that's an important thing. President Trump portrays it as, you know, they're not paying their dues. None of these other countries are paying their dues. Now, he has an argument to make about these other countries need to carry their weight more, but it's not dues. It's not a country club. It's not, you know, $200,000 are owed, and then you get the greens fees.
Exactly. They're not signing for their club sandwiches.
But I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't know if have people tried to explain. I assume people have tried to explain.
Well, then the other question is, we obviously have a sense of what he knows about our nuclear arsenal. Is Kim Jong-un an expert on nuclear arsenal, or is he very similar to Trump? Is it going to be two guys sitting in a room talking about?
We know so little about him.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's so opaque that North Korea, there's so little that the U.S. intelligence knows about what he knows, et cetera. As you noted, he won't even let people study his stool.
Yeah, exactly. That's how.
I mean, so if we don't even know that, how do you think,
Exactly. There must be a real story in that stool for you to bring your own toilet.
So they still have porn.
Yeah, exactly. That's good to know.
I'm just thinking.
Yeah,
thinking
out loud.
As an intelligence officer might.
So, first of all, congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
New York Times bestseller. You. So you wrote about 1950s Washington, D.C. This is a thriller. This is about politicians. This is about the swamp and corruption. I would have thought that if you wrote a book, you would maybe try to escape from what you talk about every day. But it seemed like you escaped via a cul-de-sac.
I went right back into the swamp. Yeah, no, it was exciting, and I could write about Washington today in a way by looking at it in 1954. And the basic premise is a young congressman and his wife go down to Washington, try to do good, and they get swept away in this conspiracy. But what was fun was writing about actual figures, John F. Kennedy as a senator and Joe McCarthy, and putting them in the book, having them be characters.
And have you gotten good feedback from people who obviously still live in that world today?
There's one Republican congressional aide who reached out to me and said that it seemed like I was trying to get some things off my chest, which I thought was funny. Because there is a lot of, you know, they say history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And when you read about Joe McCarthy and you study about Joe McCarthy, there's a lot of rhyming.
Yes.
You hear a lot of rhyming. This guy who was larger than life and very popular with the base of his party and smeared a lot of people and lied all the time. And Washington just didn't know what to do. And reporters and members of the Senate didn't know what to do.
And we also look back. I think there's a tendency to look back in the 50s as like this real apple pie era of America. But there was it was rife with corruption then as well.
It was hard. I mean, first of all, and if you're a white man, it was probably pretty good. But for everybody who wasn't a white man, it was awful. But then even beyond that, the 50s, in pop culture, it's idyllic, it's serene, it's benign. But like in truth, there was the Red Scare, there was McCarthyism, there were actual communists infiltrating the government, there was the atomic race. It was horrible. So I thought it would be fun to write because on the surface, it's all Sinatra and Jack Kennedy. But really underneath it all, it's McCarthyism and real menace.
I want to ask you about this because you obviously, you write a book, you go out, you do press about your book. Because of everything else you do, I'm going to ask you other questions. I'm going to ask you about your show on Sunday. I'm going to ask you about other people you've interviewed. Have you been surprised, because someone else who's doing press right now is President Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
And he seems very caught off guard when he is also asked about specifically the Me Too movement. Have you been surprised
Stunned.
At his failure to predict that those questions were coming?
First of all, I know some of the people on that team, and I'm sure that they tried to prepare him, but I've been amazed at how poorly he's handled these questions. I mean, a lot of them you could have anticipated. The world has changed in just the last year. Who was the Tonys host a year ago?
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a year ago.
I thought he should have done it again. I thought he was great.
So, I mean, it's just the world has changed, so you have to adapt. And I would think he would have had automatic answers for, do you owe Monica Lewinsky an apology? What do you make of the Me Too movement? What do you make of this individual case, Harvey Weinstein, whoever? And, boy, some of the answers have been just, you couldn't, if you wanted to write the worst answer he could give, it is almost as if that one he did today about whether or not you can grope people.
Yeah, it's a...
People have different rules today about where you're allowed to talk, to touch them on their bodies involuntarily.
Not well thought out.
And then he said, and then he ended it with, maybe I'm old fashioned.
Not a good way to frame it. Yeah. I do want to ask about someone else who had a real moment in the Me Too movement, and it was so tragic to lose, was Anthony Bourdain, who was your colleague at CNN.
Yeah.
I found it heartbreaking. Did you know him well?
I knew him okay. I wasn't one of his closest friends, but I knew him okay. And in fact, it was through the Me Too movement that he and I started talking a lot because he was so outraged, and we had done a lot of coverage about Harvey Weinstein last year, and he would reach out and we would talk a lot. And that's one of the things, it's such a loss for people who are inspired by him for any number of ways. His show was about the humanity of us all.
It really was. Yeah.
But he really had, the side I saw him that I loved was his passion, his righteous indignation against injustice. And against all the people that let Harvey Weinstein get away with it for so long. And it's not like there are a ton of people who have that righteous indignation. So the world is much poorer for his having left.
Yeah, he will really be missed. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thanks so much for being here. It's always just such a pleasure
to see
you, buddy.
Thank
Congrats
you.
On the book. Thank you. Jake Tapper, everybody. The Hellfire Club, available now.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Jake Tapper.
Hello.
You were hearing this after your interview with Seth, but we were taping this actually before you go out there with Seth.
It's true.
And you just left.
Well, I like the disclosure, the full disclosure.
Hey, look. I'm
transparency.
I'm with a journalist.
I know.
You're I can't just pretend.
The good government agencies.
Exactly.
The Sunlight Foundation was going to come down on you, so I'm glad you.
Yeah, we're being audited for when the interviews are happening. So you just finished your show, The Lead,
up
at the New York studio.
Yes.
How is it different doing your show in New York versus in D.C.?
Well, my staff is in D.C., so yeah. I don't get to interact with them. Normally, I get to interact with my staff face-to-face and talk about stuff this way. We do it on the phone. Mm-hmm. And the studio's in D.C., so other than that, it's not hugely different. I much prefer my set in Washington.
Right.
Than,
it looks bigger.
Yeah, this is somebody else's set. So.
Yeah. They just threw up the graphics.
Yeah, exactly.
We've talked a little bit before about like the pace of breaking news. Today's a very strange day.
Every day is a very strange day.
Yeah, that's fair. But the summit is happening.
First of all, just to blow your mind, I don't know when people are going to be listening to this, but 1 week ago today, President Trump had not yet canceled the Eagles' visit to the White House. It's just not even a week ago. That seems like, honestly, that seems like 6 years ago.
That feels like 6 years
ago. Yeah, we're in Trump dimension time.
I wanted to ask about the Eagles, though. You're a huge Eagles fan.
I am.
But you're a really solid journalist. You don't show your cards too much. What was it like covering that story? You have a bias.
I have a clear bias. Yeah. I know there was never any pretense. I have a huge bias. I have a huge pro-Eagles bias. Also, it turned out that the president just said a whole bunch of things about the Eagles that were just not true.
Right. You said recently you have a bias towards facts.
Yes.
Which seems fair.
That seems like a good place for a journalist to land.
Yeah, you would hope so.
Yeah.
But on a day like today, how are you kind of tracking the developments? Today is Tuesday. The summit is tomorrow in Singapore, tonight in the U.S., timing-wise.
Yeah, the handshake is going to be in a few hours.
Right.
And then the press conference will be, President Trump will take questions just before 8 a.m. East Coast time, mm-hmm. Tuesday morning. Yeah, it's all the international stuff as always.
Gotcha.
You know what's worse, though, by the way, having been a White House correspondent? The worst is, at least we're headquartered here.
Right.
Where we're not going to have to adjust. The worst is traveling with the president and being like in completely different time
zones.
You're like 3 days ahead of everyone. Yeah. It's very strange.
Is that super disorienting to be on those types of trips?
Yeah, it's very strange.
Well, you look up to today and just watching on CNN or MSNBC or any of these networks, like it's 3-4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And they're in a suit and they have to be fully awake.
Yep, fully awake. I know. It's the worst.
Do you ever sleep on those foreign trips?
Yeah, you learn one thing you learn as a political journalist, and you learn this during caucuses and primaries, is to steal sleep whenever you can steal it. So like, oh, we're flying from Midwestern City A to Midwestern City B. It's a 45-minute flight, you know, sunglasses, earbuds, neck pillow, out.
Yeah, that's a good skill to have, like, moving forward. Just to have it in your life.
It's an amazing skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to ask about the book, which is really great.
Thank you.
It's a really interesting book set in the 1950s.
It's called The Hellfire Club.
Yeah, let's get the plug in
And you can
there.
Purchase it on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or wherever books are sold. But there's an Audible version if you like the...
You did the audio
I did
version.
The Audible, yes.
How was that experience?
Long.
How long does it take?
It's about twice as long as the book. I think the book is like 8 or 9 hours to listen to, and it's about twice as long.
Do you do it in how many sittings?
4 or 5.
Wow.
Yeah, it's brutal.
So it's a really interesting look at 1950s politics. How do you think about the role of journalism in the 1950s, how you would hold the job, how things would be different for someone in your profession back then?
There were many more newspapers, but fewer outlets, fewer television stations. News at that point was only starting, evening news was only starting to go from 15 minutes a night to half an hour a night.
Oh, interesting.
The morning shows were only starting around that time. There was no cable and no 24/7. I think that there were a lot of great journalists at that time, but I think generally speaking, journalism is much better today because it's much more aggressive, many more outlets, more competition. And if you look back, you'll see that there's a lot of, and this is alluded to in the book, but a lot of people who were journalists, were very co-opted by power. And sometimes literally, like Joe Alsup, a famous columnist at the time, literally did work for the CIA while he was a journalist.
Yeah. Do you think we kind of idolized the journalists in the 50s, 60s, maybe?
Yeah, and you know, with good reason, there were some great ones. I mean, Edward R. Murrow's broadcasts from London during the bombing were amazing. But the truth of the matter is, I think that we have braver journalists on the domestic, when it comes to challenging domestic reporters, domestic power today than we did back then.
Right. How much research went into the book? I mean, there's a huge notes section, and you can there's so many specifics throughout the book. What did you use? What resources were you using?
Just a ton of books about the 50s, as many as possible that were written during the 50s. Biographies, you know, written about senators and congressmen and events of that time written during the era itself.
Yeah.
Well, there was this great biography of Joe McCarthy written by Jack Anderson, who was this legendary muckraking reporter. And he, it was amazing. And you just get great details. Like, he would talk about how Joe McCarthy would... It came out in 1950s too, so it was McCarthy was still at the height of his power, and is very critical. And one of the great scenes had him drinking scotch and bicarbonate of soda and eating a stick of butter.
Yeah, I remember that.
Eating a stick of butter, because that's what he would do when he drank to excess, which was quite often.
Yeah.
And I put that detail in the book, and then I included the end notes because I wanted people to know about the crazy stuff that was real.
Right. That's a fun game to kind of play with the book as well. Like, what's real and what you took some kind of creative license with, which obviously you cannot do in your day job.
Well, a lot of the stuff is real, though. I mean, the Puerto Ricans shooting up the House of Representatives.
I did not know about that.
That's real.
I Googled it because I was like, what?
Yeah, it's real.
I'd never heard of that. Yeah.
Real. The chemical plants and all the people that died in Mossville, Louisiana.
Yeah.
All those sheep dying in Utah.
Right.
That's real. The congressman faking his war record. Yeah. That's real. I mean, there's a lot of the craziest stuff in the book is real.
It's a great plug for the book.
Thanks.
Let me ask you a final question here. I'm distracted by your cufflinks.
So they're McDonald's French fry cufflinks.
Yeah, they are.
I wandered onto Anderson's office today just to say hi to Anderson and his team. And Anderson was not there, but one of his staffers gave me these McDonald's cufflinks. I don't know why. They're McDonald's French fries.
Yeah.
I don't know why he had them, but he said nobody else has French cuffs. So he gave them to me. He bestowed them upon me. So I now have them.
Dapper. Jake, thank you so much. This is really fun.
Thanks so much. Talk to you later.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat! Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.